You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org, and that's especially available for folks who are outside of our listening area. You can also access prior shows on the website, again, at wdiy.org. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today's March 5th, 2014. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 16,360, the NASDAQ at 4,357, and the S&P at 1,873. Last week, we took your tax questions as I discussed funding retirement accounts. I thank everyone who called in. It was a great show. We encourage questions. I think last week's show will be a great segue into tonight's show when we talk about portfolio creation considerations with my guest, Kevin Brogius. We are live. We are here to take your questions. Judy Ann will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. And I know it is tax season, so folks have to get in those tax questions. You're welcome to call in as well. And that will also be available next week as well in the upcoming weeks. The number to call in is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. As I mentioned, Kevin Brogius is my guest this evening. He's the founder and president of Wealth Management, Inc., an independent fee-only financial planning and registered investment advisory firm. He's a certified financial planner, practitioner, and certified public accountant, and a personal financial specialist. Kevin is an active member of the AICPA, which is the American Institute of CPAs, as well as the PICPA. He serves as chairman of the Lehigh Valley Chapter's Personal Financial Planning Committee. He's a registered financial advisor with the National Association of Personal Financial Planning, Personal Financial Advisors, that's NAPFA, as a fee-only professional. He received his BS in accounting from Villanova and an MBA from Wilkes University. He's also an adjunct professor at DeSales University, where he teaches financial management. Kevin's been on the show a couple times before, so he's an old pro. I didn't have to tell him anything tonight. He walked in, and I'm just going a mile a minute, and he just sits there and looks at me.
I'm taking it all in. Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me back.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. I appreciate Kevin's help on this topic tonight as well. So it was great having something to talk about that I didn't have to think up myself. So I thank you for being here. So we're going to talk about what to consider when building a portfolio. So first, let's give the broad areas, and then as we go through the show, we'll dig down into, you know, some of the considerations in each of those broad areas. So the broad areas we're going to talk about when we consider building a portfolio?
Yeah, Lori, what I consider are inflation and how to protect yourself against inflation. You need growth in your portfolio, okay, no matter what age you are. And sometimes I get this from retirees, well, I'm retired now, I really don't need, you know, stocks in my portfolio, and that is wrong, and we'll get into that a little bit. And you also need stability in your portfolio. And stability helps you, should we get another crisis like we just had in 2008, 2009, okay? within the stability, you need some liquidity to tide you over until we get out of that, you know, crisis mode or the bear market. And also, where to hold these investments really matters. Because, and I've been waiting all day to say this, it's not what you make, it's what you keep that counts.
It's not what you make, it's what you keep. That's good. Okay, so we're going to go through all of this. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you're welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And we're talking about portfolio creation considerations. So Kevin just mentioned inflation, growth, stability, and where to hold your investments, or let's refer to it as maybe the geography of your investments. So let's talk about inflation first. Last week, we talked about funding retirement accounts. It seemed to be a hot topic interlaced with the income tax consequences. So I think a lot of what we're going to talk about tonight could kind of be an overlay on what we did last week, some extra boost to people's retirement planning and tax planning. So inflation, starting early, you have time on your side, but time eventually runs out. So how does this and inflation impact your portfolio planning, you know, especially for retirement? Because that's typically where people think they're saving. You know, we're saving. What are we saving for? Well, typically for those days when we're not making money.
Correct.
So
yeah.
Inflation, how does that play into this?
Yeah, first for inflation, just to give everybody some perspective, the average historical inflation rate in the U.S., let's say it was about 3.5%, okay? What that means to your purchasing power is that in 20 years, you'll have about half the purchasing power as you do today, okay? So that means whatever $10 buys you today, okay, you'll need $20 to buy the same goods and services in 20 years. So it's very important to keep that in mind, and it's very important to protect your portfolio against inflation. And this is especially important for retirees as their income now becomes more fixed, you know, as they transition from paychecks that may have been increasing with the level of inflation over the years, now to income streams that may not be. Okay, so now they're going to be relying on, you know, their pensions perhaps, their Social Security, okay, and things like that. Now, Social Security does get the bump in COLA, but some other forms of income do not. Now, there's two asset classes that I feel are specifically suited to protect investors against inflation. Now, the first one is issued by the U.S. Treasury, and these are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, or TIPS. Okay? And these are bonds whose principal adjusts to the consumer price index periodically. In addition to that, they also pay interest every 6 months at a fixed rate, but the fixed rate is applied to the inflation-adjusted principal. So really what you have there is you're receiving interest, which is a real rate of return. Okay, so it's an inflation-adjusted rate of return. All right. Since TIPS provide inflation protection or insurance for the investor, they do pay less of an interest rate than regular treasury bonds, okay? So you're basically buying some insurance there. Now, at maturity, a TIP bond will be redeemed at the greater of their inflation-adjusted principal or the par amount at the original issue, whichever is higher. Okay, so if there is deflation, the investor's principal is protected from that downside. Again, another nice benefit to holding TIPS. TIPS are issued in 5, 10, and 30-year maturities, and an investor should have a mix of short, both long and short-term maturity TIPS.
Now, Kevin, what I thought, you know, it seems like people are moving away from, you know, bonds. They're concerned about prices going up or interest rates going up, and then their bonds values goes down. That's a little different with TIPS, right? TIPS work a little bit differently than what we would say bonds.
Yes, so, the TIPS are still you still have your interest rate risk. And we did a segment on this, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
So if people still need a refresher on interest rate risk, go back to the segment we did.
I think it was in October of 2013.
Correct. You still are subject to the interest rate risk. However, as if you hold these things to maturity, you are assured of getting your par value for these bonds.
Okay. And as we go through the show, we're going to talk about, remember, these are strategies and considerations in building a portfolio, and we're not saying that this would be the only part of your portfolio. So we're going to talk about some more ideas when we come back from our break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station. If you appreciate and value the programming we provide, including NPR's in-depth news coverage, our local public affairs programs, and the diverse mix of music we broadcast each day, please consider becoming a member. Membership is our most important source of revenue. We can't do it without you. You can make a secure donation online at wdiy.org. That's wdiy.org. And thanks for your support.
And we are back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Kevin Brogius. He's a CPA and a CFP and a PFS. And we're talking about portfolio creation considerations and the four broad areas in planning to build a portfolio that Kevin suggests are considering inflation, consider growth, consider the stability and the geography of your assets. And we were just talking, as one little arm of that, with inflation, looking at or considering treasury, inflation protected securities. Those are called TIPS. Kevin, before we move into some other options they might have to help protect themselves against inflation, you had said that TIPS have this built in where it adjusts to the consumer price index, and it the fixed rates applied to the inflation adjusted principal for, you know, the interest rate and that, and then you can buy them in 5, 10, and 30 year maturities. I'm trying to visualize this for our listeners, that let's pretend people are saying, oh, you know, they're not paying that great of interest rate right now, so, and inflation's not really that bad right now, so I'm not really interested. When would be a time that someone might think about this? Is it now? Is it, or do you wait till inflation starts to go up to get that inflation protection? And if you wait, what is the consequence of waiting?
That's a good question. I would say this to you, Lori. You know, historically in the U.S., we've had several periods of high inflation. When they happened, it spiked very quickly, okay? And unexpectedly. And I'm just looking at a chart I brought with me. This is inflation by decade. And I'll go back to the most recent kind of hyperinflation we had was in the 70s. And for the decade of the 70s, we experienced about 7% inflation for the decade, which is pretty high, because people have their mind wrapped around about 3%, mm-hmm. right? Now, right. Recently it's been a lot less. I think last 12 months it was about 1.6. So, you know, then you get a feeling of false security, right? There. Well, it's not a problem. It's not a problem, okay? In the 80s, it was about 5.5%, okay? In the 40s, about 5.5%. And in the 1900s, in the teens, up until 1920, almost about 10%. So these periods do happen in the U.S. So what I tell clients, even though it's not a problem now, it could be a problem. And so protect yourself with these securities.
For like a piece of your portfolio.
Correct. Yeah, not all of your portfolio. And so it would be a piece of your bond holdings. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. And There are some other ideas you have for
so that was
protection?
Correct. So the other one that I use for inflation protection are real estate investment trusts, or REITs, R-E-I-T-S. And these invest in companies that have a direct investment in income-producing real estate properties, like shopping malls, office buildings, apartments, hotels, medical space, things like that. The REITs collect rents from the tenants of the properties and must pass along at least 90% of their profits to the shareholder to maintain their REIT status. A company that qualifies as a REIT is allowed to deduct dividends paid to shareholders and therefore owe very little corporate tax. Okay? So it's a benefit to the company to be declared a REIT.
Okay.
All right? Because of this, dividends earned by the holders of the REITs are non-qualifying dividends and are not tax deductible to the corporation, and we'll talk more about this. So basically what I'm saying there is, for most taxpayers, dividends are capped at 15%, not for REITs, though. REIT dividends are taxed at ordinary income tax levels.
Okay.
Now, they're good inflation hedge for investors, I believe, for two reasons. Number one, they are a hard asset, okay? And as inflation increases, so does the value of hard assets. So that's really what you want during periods of high inflation. You really want a hard asset, okay? And they also pay dividends from rents that they collect, okay? And as inflation increases, so do the values of the rents. So they protect you in kind of two ways there. All right, that's why I consider them for all portfolios.
Yeah, so someone might have it in their mind when they think about, you know, you hear real estate and you think inflation protection, you might say, well, I have real estate, I own my own home, so maybe part of my portfolio is considered that. But our home isn't necessarily giving us any income stream.
Mm-hmm.
So this is also one of the advantages of that.
So your home's not giving you an income stream, nor are you going to sell it to fund your retirement. Most people don't. Most people stay in their home.
Right.
Okay.
So that was another option there. Any other options you use with inflation?
Not for inflation.
For that piece of the
yeah. So for that for the inflation consideration is mainly, tips and real estate investment trusts that I use.
Okay, great. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're talking about portfolio creation considerations, and we're looking at different pieces to consider, and one of those is inflation. And let me just reiterate, as Kevin had mentioned at the top of the program, the reason you want to pay attention to inflation is because even if it's only at 3.5%, even though, you know, it's a little lower now, but historically running at 3.5%, what that translates into is $10 today, in 20 years you'll need $20. So if you have fixed income expectations for your retirement, how are you going to keep up with inflation with your expenses if your income is fixed? For example, if you're living on a fixed income like a pension, or perhaps you may have bought some kind of a fixed annuity or Social Security, which may or may not keep up with inflation at the same rate, even though there are COLA adjustments. Sometimes I don't know if it keeps up quite the same. Recognizing, folks, that inflation rates impact different types of spending that you might have. For this 3.5% may apply to maybe consumer goods, but when we're looking at medical expenses, which sometimes in retirement, those are our biggest expenses, the inflation rate on medical expenses may be at a much higher rate. So even though you might be getting a cost of living adjustment on your Social Security, it still may not be enough to keep up with the inflation that's applying to some of those other expenses that you might have. So when you're looking at building your portfolio, one of the things to consider is inflation, and what are you doing in your portfolio to help protect against that? And we're going to be talking also about growth when we come back from our next break, because that actually too is another element of protecting against inflation if done properly. So when we come back, we will take your questions. You're welcome to call in live. I didn't mention this. You can call live and talk to us on air or off air. You can just give your question to Judy Ann. She's in the studio this evening. She'll take down your question and bring it into the studio for us, and we'll see what we can do to answer it. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back. Thank you, Jeff. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Kevin Brosius. He's the founder and president of Wealth Management, Inc., an independent fee-only financial planning and RIA firm. He's also a CPA and CFP, and we're talking about portfolio creation considerations. Jeff, we do have a phone call. I think it's a tax question from John in Bethlehem. John, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
Okay, this is a question on taxes, uh-huh. Not on topic. And the question is, I have a house in Bethlehem.
Yep.
And the township wants to widen the street and in front of the house. So I received $3,500 last year, and I just received a 1099-S. And the address or legal description of the 1099-S is easement of land located at such an address. And I wanted to know why is this a tax situation?
John, did they pay you?
How do I report this? If I have to report it,
well, it could be like way more complicated than what you might first believe. First of all, did they pay you $3,500?
They did, yes.
Yes, okay. So one of the things that happens with an easement is that there could be two elements to this transaction. It could be called a bargain sale. And if what I'm used to is in an easement, sometimes people donate like part of their property or their land or something. And it could be a similar circumstance with the township if the value of that land, did anyone come in and appraise the value of that area that you gave away? Or that you sold?
The engineers and other people, they did have an appraisal of the land that they purchased, let's say, you know.
Okay, so one of the things that could happen is if they deemed the value that you've had to write off to them was $3,500 and you received $3,500, then yes, it was a sale of the land. 1099-S is a tax reporting document. It's sale proceeds of a real estate or land transaction. So you would have a sale proceeds of $3,500, and then the cost basis would have to be calculated based on what you had paid for the property for maybe forever ago. And you may have a little bit of a gain there on your Schedule D. However, if the value of your land or that piece that was given away was, let's say, $7,000 and you only received $3,500, we call that a bargain sale, and it's more complicated. It has two elements. There's a bit of a deduction, like um, a, it's not a charitable deduction, but a nonprofit deduction that you may get on your Schedule A if you itemize deductions. So it's a little bit more complicated. I don't know if they've provided you any paperwork or advice on how to figure this calculation. It would be the easiest if it was only if you received exactly what it was worth. Then that's okay. A pretty easy transaction. You just have to figure out what your cost basis is on that little piece of land. So if it's, you know, a tenth of an acre out of 1 acre, it's 10% of your cost basis from your original property. So a little bit more complicated probably than I can answer on the show right now, but you're right to call and ask. And yes, it is a reportable transaction. It's just how you end up reporting depends on your set of circumstances.
Okay. Because I didn't gift anything. I was told that eminent domain would predominate, you know, and they said, well, the value is $3,500. I will give you $3,500.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, then that's what, then I think that might be what it's worth. So it's worth checking out, but I do think you have to report that then.
Okay. But then you say the cost basis. I have to look at the cost basis using the purchase cost of the property,
correct.
10 years ago, whatever
correct.
It was.
Correct.
Okay, and that would be a deduction from the gross proceeds. Okay,
you'll
I got,
have to
I got
allocate
an idea,
okay.
and I'll put it together, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
If I have any, when I'm doing the tax return, if I have any further issues, I will call you back on a Wednesday.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure I'll be able to help you all the way there, John, but I hopefully gave you some guidance. Good luck with that.
You did, yes.
Okay,
thank you very
have
much.
A good night. Thanks. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on air or send your questions to Judy Ann. She'll bring them into the studio if you want it to be off air or through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We do have in the studio Kevin Brogius this evening, and we're talking about portfolio creation considerations. We just went over some of the pieces that you, Kevin, is suggesting you consider, and one was inflation. And we wanted to talk about the second element of consideration, Kevin, which was growth. So what do we want to look at here? And we have about 3 minutes before our break, and then we
sure.
can kind of
yeah. Well, growth is important for all portfolios, and I believe especially important for retirees, because with the medical advances, lifespans have increased, but also the risk of exhausting your assets prior to your death have increased.
Especially in Pennsylvania, the costs are
right,
astronomical.
Right. So the asset classes to provide growth in your portfolio. Number one, U.S. domestic equities, both large and small company. Okay, and the historical return for large company stocks has been between, say, 9 and 10%, and smaller companies somewhere between 11 and 12%.
Mm.
Okay. But you also need, in addition to your U.S. equities, you also need foreign equities. Because of the world GDP, the U.S. is only about 25%. Okay. So foreign equities would help you diversify your holdings. So the first thing I consider in foreign is foreign developed markets. Okay, so these are funds that invest in companies that reside in non-U.S. Developed countries like Germany, France, Italy, and Japan. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I also consider, to a smaller degree, emerging market equities. And these are funds that invest in companies that reside in non-U.S. emerging countries like Brazil, India, Russia, China, the BRIC countries. They're more volatile than other equity holdings, and so portfolios should hold less of these equities. And if you're really adventurous, you could get into frontier markets. And these would be companies in countries like Kuwait, Nigeria, Colombia, Pakistan. Okay.
So when we're talking about growth and we're looking at equities, you mentioned considering both U.S. and foreign, but breaking it down, U.S. meaning domestic equities, companies that are, you know, here that we're familiar with, and then also consider looking at foreign developed market equities, which you said Germany, France, Italy, Japan. With that, though, we also don't want people to think you're talking about necessarily, you know, half the portfolio. Kevin's not making any statement about as to what percent. These are just things we're saying that they need to look at, because the growth is not just in U.S. domestics, you said, because that only makes up about, what was that, 30% of the
GDP? About 25%.
25% of the gross domestic product. Some of it is also coming from foreign corporate. So because we've become such a global economy,
correct,
that it people really need to kind of look at outside of the U.S. to kind of fit their portfolio. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from our break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810 or email at yourfinancialchoices.com. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit WDIY.org.
And we are back. Thank you, Jeff. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can call in with questions live and talk with us, or off air, whatever you're comfortable with. Judy Ann's in the studio, and she can write down your question and bring it in to us if you'd like. I have in the studio with me this evening Kevin Brogius. He's the founder and president of Wealth Management, and we are talking about portfolio creation considerations. And right before the break, we were talking about, we've already talked about inflation, now we're talking about growth and looking at even diversification in what we call growth assets, which typically people think of as equities. Talking about even diversification there, looking at domestic, but also foreign equities, et cetera. And Kevin, the point of looking at that, we had said something, you know, that you go ahead. Tell me why we want to look at foreign. Lost my thought. Thinking about taxes.
You know, over time, your foreign equities will perform about the same as your U.S. equities. But they won't do it all at the same time. So, like, for instance, last year, U.S. equities had a great year. Okay, the S&P had a great year. However, emerging markets were down. Okay? And you'll get other years where foreign developed markets will be up, U.S. might be down, and emerging markets up, or some mix thereof. So you get a bit of non-correlation in your equity holdings, and the more, not to get too technical, but the more non-correlating assets you can add, the smoother your portfolio returns will be. So you reduce your risk.
So people aren't chasing each of these. What would we say, sectors or
asset classes?
Asset classes. Mm-hmm. Okay. People shouldn't be chasing the asset classes. They should be looking at building a portfolio, which is what the point of the show is, talking about what to consider when building a portfolio. Consider these different pieces, and while one may be down and one may be up, that smooths out the volatility, because sometimes we can't predict when they're going to take off or when they're not, just like you had mentioned earlier with inflation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it comes quick and people don't know. So the point of kind of looking at the different asset classes and smoothing out the returns helps with the growth and performance of the portfolio.
Yeah, and what you should do, Lori, always, as you know, is rebalance your portfolio. So when you rebalance the portfolio, what you're doing is taking advantage of any market inefficiencies. So you're going to buy low, right, and mm-hmm. sell high. You're mm-hmm. going to sell those securities that made money, buy those asset classes that didn't make money.
And a lot of people have trouble with that, but that's Correct. How they eventually get ahead. Okay, so we've talked about inflation. We've looked at growth potential. With growth, though, we said those equities could have some volatility. So how do we build our portfolio for growth but guard against that volatility?
Correct. So you need a bit of stability
okay.
in your
portfolio.
Okay, and
that's the next piece of your consideration. So let's talk about stability. How do we...
Mm-hmm. So you know, stability is important in overcoming the periods of volatility. You know, the market will reward you for assuming a lot of risk. Okay, and it rewards you rather nicely, you know, 9 to 10% a year on average.
Mm-hmm.
There could be years when it's down 40%. Okay. But on average, 9 to 10% a year. Okay. But the worst case scenario for you as an investor is having to sell your investments in a down market to maintain your lifestyle. So when you sell in a down market, what you're doing is locking in your losses. And that's the worst case scenario,
mm-hmm.
okay? So what you need is liquidity to tide you over during these periods, okay? Now first, you're gonna need a reserve of cash. And for people that are still working, I tell them to have an emergency fund. And somewhere between 6 and 9 months. And they can be real lifesavers. So if you get laid off, right, you go and tap your emergency fund and life goes on as usual until you can pick up another job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, when you're retired, I tell clients to keep at least 2 years of reserves on hand to fund their retirement living expenses for the next 2 years. Okay? And again, the reason for that is so you don't have to dip into equities when they're down,
mm-hmm.
all right? Now, as you rebalance your portfolio, so suppose we go a year, they have suppose 2 years of reserves, and we go a year and the stock market's up. They have 1 year of reserves, we do a rebalance, and we refresh their cash position. Okay, now they're back to 2 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If the stock market's down, we don't refresh it. Okay, if the stock market's down the next year, we don't refresh it. Okay, so I'm saying somewhere between 2 to 3 years of cash holdings so you don't have to dip into the equities or your other investments when they're down. Okay,
okay.
So that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Other stability would be provided by pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that provides a steady stream of cash flow. However, with pensions, most of them don't have a COLA.
Okay, right.
You know? So you're going backwards. Your purchasing power with a pension actually goes backwards every year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you have annuities. When you annuitize it, you know, it can provide a steady stream of cash flow. And this is nice during periods of market volatility. Okay? Social Security. Think of Social Security as an annuity with a cost of living adjustment. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best annuity you can have.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I think you had segments on Social Security.
I did.
Before,
I had. Yeah. I've had segments on Social Security, but we also did a show with Carrie Pector, who wrote Annuities for Dummies. And I think. Do you know Carrie Pector? He knows Russ Wild.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
We did that show probably, I don't know, a few weeks back, maybe as well. So people can go back and listen to that.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast yep. as well. So that yep. was good that you mentioned that.
So that's a terrific annuity guaranteed by the government with a cost of living adjustment. Doesn't mm-hmm. get any better than that, right? This doesn't get any better than that. And then also what will provide you stability will be your short-term bonds, your floating rate bonds, and you also have to have some intermediate-term bonds to provide some more income for you, okay? Now, these, you know, I look at these the short term and the floating rate especially as providing like a second tier of available funds. They're not going to move around a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even with interest rate, you know, increases, they still won't.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to lose a lot of value. So, suppose as an investor, we have 2 years where the market's down, you blew through your cash reserves. Well, your short-term bonds and your floating rate bonds would act as second-tier reserves for you then.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah.
Right? And so now between your cash holdings and your short-term and floating rate bonds, you probably have about 4 or 5 years then that you could go and still not tap your equities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, like I said, with intermediate-term bonds, you have to have some intermediate-term bonds in your portfolio. They do provide a boost to your income, okay? They're longer term. There's more risk, more interest rate risk with intermediate terms, but there is also more income there. Mm-hmm. However, they're still historically much more stable than equities.
Historically,
yes.
They're much mm-hmm. more stable than equities. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're starting to build this portfolio. We're considering inflation and what kind of holdings we have in our portfolio that are going to help protect that. What pieces of our portfolio might provide some of the growth that we anticipate or may need, and what in our portfolio is going to give us the stability combined with other sources of cash flow that we might have, such as, you know, pensions or annuities or the Social Security. So we talked about having that emergency reserve. We talked about the second tier of short-term bonds, floating rate bonds that can even boost you maybe up to a 4 years kind of safety net. And then also looking at intermediate term bonds. So we also are both CPAs and in the midst of tax season, me more than you. so we understand the impact of taxes also on our investment options, because when we're looking at building portfolios and where we're going to take money from to meet our cash flow needs in retirement, sometimes what I'm talking to clients about is where you draw your money could end up having a huge income tax consequence on your tax return. You mentioned earlier about dividends being qualifying for a lower tax rate. That's that 15% rate. Some investments we have do not qualify for lower tax rates. Kevin had mentioned the REITs. While they might provide some inflation protection, they may not give us tax advantages. So it's all about understanding how we're building our portfolio, what it's also going to do to our income taxes, and how can we do it in a tax-efficient way. So the last piece of the show, we're going to talk about where to hold investments. I want to mention the number again. We have a few minutes before our next break, but if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So let's talk about where to hold investments, Kevin, from your perspective in building a portfolio. And then maybe when we come back from the break, we can talk about some of the tax considerations I like people to think about also when they're drawing money out of their portfolio. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So so again, it's not what you make. It's what you keep that counts. Okay, so I want everybody to just remember that. If you don't remember anything else from that, remember that, okay?
It's not what you make, it's what you keep.
Right. So there are some investments that are better held in taxable accounts because of the way they produce income, and other investments best held in tax-deferred accounts because of the way they produce income. Now, for most taxpayers, taxes on dividends and capital gains are maximum 15%. Okay? So whether you're in the 25% bracket, you know, the 33% bracket, unless you get up to the real high income brackets.
39.6% bracket, then it jumps, but
then it jumps. You're capped at 15%. So what you want to hold then in your taxable investments are those investments that produce dividend and capital gain income. And what does that are equity holdings, your stock holdings. Mm-hmm. Okay? So why pay 33 or 35% on that income when you can pay 15% on that mm-hmm. income? Okay? So You know, what really drives me crazy is when I see prospective clients come in and I look at their portfolios and they're holding the exact same investments in their taxable accounts as in their IRA or 401k accounts. So almost no thought was given to, you know, the tax consequence of doing this. Okay. Now,
you know what, Kevin, I'm going to stop you there because we're going to have our break in about 30 seconds. So I'll tell you a quick story. I had someone come in, a prospect, and they were so excited talking on and on about their capital gains and their qualifying dividends and things like that. It was all in their retirement account, all of it. And in their taxable account was all their bonds. And I thought, who talked to them that they completely switched it, the opposite? And I don't know where they got it in their mind that one was better than the other, but it was crazy. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 31 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, gradual clearing, lows around 15. Thursday, sunny skies, highs around 30. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, partly sunny skies with each day in the low 40s. The time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. We're talking about portfolio creation considerations. If you have tax questions, you can also call in. We have about 14 minutes left. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call and talk live on air or off air, whatever you're most comfortable with. Judy Ann can write down the question and bring it in to us, or you can send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. I have in the studio with me this evening Kevin Brogius. He's the founder and president of Wealth Management, an independent fee-only financial planning and RIA firm, and we are talking about different things you have to consider when you're looking at portfolio creation, building your portfolio. We've talked about inflation, we've talked about growth, we've talked about stability, and now we're talking about the geography of your portfolio and the investments that you're making. Where do you have them? Where are you putting certain investments? Before the break, Kevin had mentioned, you know, some investments that we have will throw off income that gives us a better income tax rate than other income. So things like equities that have dividends that qualify, we have something called qualified dividends that give us a better income tax rate. Sometimes we might have bonds, bank accounts, savings accounts that throw off interest income, and interest income is ordinary income. So let's talk about where we'd want to put these different kinds of investments. And there's other ones too. You mentioned REITs earlier, so we can remind folks about the REITs. So Kevin, where are we putting these pieces of our portfolio?
Sure. So the first thing I do is try to populate as much as the taxable accounts with the equity holdings. So they're producing dividends, they're producing capital gains, and we're maximum 15%. And by the way, if we're in the 15% tax bracket, you're paying zero tax on that.
Good
Everybody
point.
Hear that out there?
Yeah. Right. If you're in the 15% tax bracket, to the extent you're in the 15% tax bracket, your qualified dividends or long-term capital gains would be taxed at zero. And Kevin, quite often too, you're probably working with retirees, and sometimes when you're no longer getting the paycheck, maybe they don't have a pension, their income could fall into those
That's exactly
brackets,
right. Exactly right.
Especially
right,
married,
yes.
Filing joint. You can have a little bit more income and be in the 15% bracket. So the potential to have zero income tax or up to 15% income tax on that equity portion, you want to put that in taxable accounts.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Now, your investments that produce income, like your bond investments, okay, would be taxable at ordinary income tax rates, okay, unless they're municipal bonds, and that's a whole other segment. But if they're regular bonds, they'd be taxed at ordinary income tax rates, okay, so you want to hide them in your tax-advantaged accounts. So they're best served in your IRAs, in your 401ks, 403bs, in your annuities, okay? That's the best place for these income-producing assets. In addition to that...
Can I just say why? And that's because, folks, those investment vehicles are already going to be ordinary income. No matter what you have invested in that vehicle, the 401k, if it's all been done pre-tax, and the assumption is it has, 401ks, annuities, 403bs, traditional IRAs, those are all come out as ordinary income no matter what you have in them. So if you have equities in those, it comes out as ordinary income upon distribution. If you have bonds, the interest, the distribution, it all comes out as ordinary income. So Kevin's point is, if it all comes out as ordinary income anyway, let's put the ordinary income producing assets there. Because remember, you want to balance your portfolio overall, and you want to do it over all your whole holdings. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so we had mentioned REITs before, and REITs are a little bit different. You know, they get a tax break at the corporate level, but you don't get the qualifying dividend advantage at the investor level. And so any dividends paid from REITs, and they pay nice dividends. You know, real estate investment trusts usually pay pretty nice dividends, but they're non-qualifying dividends, and they'll be taxed at ordinary income tax rates. So they're best held, again, in tax-advantaged accounts. Again, tax-advantaged IRAs, 401ks, et cetera. Okay.
And we call those tax advantage, folks, because they're deferral. You know, we're not having to recognize that income year after year. So we call those tax advantaged, because the idea is hopefully you're not having to take money out or pay income tax on the earnings in them while you're working and you're making money. You defer it until a later time in your life in retirement where maybe you're not making as much money. So you get the advantage of compounding on money that you're not paying income tax on, in essence. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, so the last one is TIPS. So we talked about TIPS being a bond, and we all know bonds pay interest, okay? So that automatically qualifies them for, you know, a tax-advantaged account. But also, TIPS also produce phantom income. And the phantom income is the income produced when the principal adjusts to the consumer price index. If it's not held in an IRA or a tax-advantaged account, it's fully taxable at ordinary income tax rates.
Currently. And then when, even though you might not be receiving the money.
Correct. So you could have, So you could get a tax bill, the worst of both, you know, worlds. You get a tax bill but no cash.
Okay, right. And that's the original issue discount that we see sometimes, OID, folks, when you have your tax documents. And sometimes that comes in a little later, too. So, Kevin, if it's in an IRA, it's not a big deal.
Correct.
Because we don't have to report anything that's in the IRA. Okay.
Until you draw it out, of course, when, you know, you have to take your RMDs at age 70 and a half, or you know, when you need the cash if you're over 59 and a half.
Okay. So when we look at the portfolios, let's kind of put this all together now. So someone comes in and they're going to sit down with you. What are some of the factors you're looking at when we talked about inflation and growth and stability and then where we're going to put it? But what other factors come into that decision in building that portfolio? Because you mentioned that we have to do things like rebalance. I imagine we also have to do some kind of allocation of, as you said, all these different kinds of assets, but where we may skew more towards equities or we may skew more towards income, depending on age and different influences. So I'd like you to kind of talk about that a little bit, like give us an example of what it looks like when someone comes in to talk to you. And then there was one other thought I had. I'll think of it while you're talking.
Okay. So okay. Now, when somebody comes in, a couple of things, again, considerations on the portfolio. One is, how much risk do I want to assume mm-hmm. in my portfolio? How much risk can I stand? Now, if you're young, if you're in your 20s or 30s, you should be heavily weighted towards the equity portion of your portfolio, okay? And I try to talk people in their 20s into at least 85% in stocks, okay? Mm-hmm. And I tell, you know, the younger clients, when the market crashes, that's the best thing that can happen for you. Okay. It may not feel that way, but guess what? You're buying in at very low prices then. And the market has always come back. Always. Mm-hmm. Right? We've been through how many different wars, recessions, Great Depressions, police actions, whatever it is. The market has always come back.
Well, as someone once mentioned, when we think about the markets, people just think market, it's like this generic term. But the markets make up the bricks and mortar, the companies, the tables we sit at, the food we eat, the clothes we wear. Those are the companies that have to continue producing goods that we need to live on a daily basis. So sometimes people get that mixed up, that behind the markets are actual companies mm-hmm. that are producing.
So I look at people's age. I look at, then I'll give them a questionnaire and ask them some questions to kind of figure out their risk tolerance. You know, sometimes people come in and say, yeah, I want 95% stocks. And I say, well, okay. How would you feel if your portfolio lost 40% this year? Well, that's now a different question, mm-hmm. right? Well, I wouldn't feel all that great. Well, then maybe you shouldn't be in 95% stocks. So it's your age, your risk tolerance, and then I also consider your time to goal, right? So if you know, sometimes I get people that come in and say, you know, something like, well, my child's going to college and she's going to start in 5 years. You know, what's the best investment? Well, I would never recommend, you know, a very small percentage of that investment to be in the stock market. You're going to need that money in the short term, mm-hmm. okay? So it's time to goal. Mm-hmm. Like somebody in their 20s, right? They might have 40 more years to work.
Right.
Right? So if the stock market crashes two more times for them or three more, that's no big deal.
And sometimes, too, actually, when we're talking about young people at that age, we're not talking about huge portfolios that they're going to lose their entire wealth, because they might be building up a portfolio through a 401k and putting, you know, $500 a month in it. So mm-hmm. it's not like they're losing $1 million. They're just starting to build up with their gathering their assets. I know what I wanted to mention too. You had said that when someone comes in, you first look at filling up the taxable account bucket with the equities, but in the overall portfolio, they may have more money in their tax advantage account. So it's not that you wouldn't put equities in those accounts,
correct.
The IRAs, the 401ks, you still might end up with equities there.
Right.
Because you still overall, the different types of accounts someone has, you still will have that portfolio allocation to their risk tolerance and mm-hmm. looking at all the different kinds of assets they have. Right.
That's right. And one more thing, one more caveat, in their Roth IRA, I put the most volatile, most highest producing assets in there. I try to, because they're assets you won't pay any tax on and you never have to take them out. And they're great inheritance vehicles, too.
I know. I love those for inheriting. And they you want those to grow, because there's not going to be any income tax on the future. Kevin, we're already coming up at the end of the show. That went very fast. And I appreciate you being here. So tonight we talked about the considerations in building a portfolio. We looked at inflation and growth, stability, and the geography of your investments and the importance of that. And one of the reasons is because we also can get you tax savings by doing it in a thought-out, smart kind of way. Kevin, if folks want to reach you, where do they reach you?
Yeah, my phone number is 484-264-6270, and you can find me on the web at www.wealthmanagement1.com.
WealthManagement1.com. Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
You.
I appreciate it. Folks, next week, we're going to dig a little deeper into the discussion started tonight. I think it's a great segue again, how different kinds of income affect your tax return. So we started talking about that tonight, and we'll build on that into next week, talking about, Kevin mentioned REITs, and REITs can collect rent but pay out dividends to folks, even though they're non-qualifying dividends. Some folks even have rental properties and rental income. So we'll talk about the consequences of that income or loss on your tax return as it relates to something called passive losses and net investment income and things like that. So how different kinds of income affect your tax return. And we'll take your tax questions as well. So thank you, listeners. Thank you, Judy Ann. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin, again, for being here. I really appreciate it. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.